I could call the Customer Service and Operations Committee meeting to order. I would ask for a motion to approve the agenda. Motion made and seconded to approve the agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. I would entertain a motion for the approval of the minutes of the meeting of May the 10th. Motion made and seconded. Any comments? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Two items for information. Customer service action plan.
If I might, I think I'll start and say a couple words.
I didn't see you over there.
I've been pushed out. I'm lucky I have a seat at the table this afternoon. I am. I've joined the good side, right. Now I can ask the questions, Christian.
Looks different from over here.
Yeah.
Right?
I just want to say a couple words and then turn over to the executive leadership team, at least some of the members that are represented here. For the last year, year and a half, too, we've been focusing on rebuilding the foundation for Washington Metro. And that's been around safety, state of good repair, which not only important to us, but most important to our customers. And along that way, we've also been doing other things that are important to our customers, adding things. We've discussed them with the board at various points in time. But over the last 6-7 months, we made a focused effort to not only continue to hear from various constituencies, but to go back and talk to our customers, talk to our frontline employees, do some surveys and research to understand what their priorities were, where there were gaps, perceived gaps in the type of service they were receiving. And this is not just about on-time performance, but all the other customer touching points that we have. We've done that, and this team will go through it, identified that, put together a plan, some of which was already underway, some of which is new, to in a focused way address the many attributes of customer service. And I'm sure we'll find more as we go along. I'm sure you'll have some suggestions. But the purpose of this afternoon's discussion is to sort of bring a focus on that effort, what's been learned, and in an organized way with an action plan, you know, deliverables, that sort of thing, say what we're doing to improve customer service. So I'll turn it over to Barbara and the team at this point and let them go forward. And I sit back and watch.
Okay. Good afternoon, Barbara Richardson. And it's my pleasure to be here with my colleagues from the executive leadership team. And this truly is a team effort. And I think this is reflected by all of us that are here, and our customer is the center of what we do, and it touches every part and everything that we do in every single discipline. So we're here to, as the general manager said, to provide an overview of the action plan that we've put together to improve customer service. And it is work that started 8 to 9 months ago. But it all begins really with the journey, the customer journey, and the customer's point of view about travel on Metro. And it's from their vantage point, and I think I've shared this chart with you before, but it's all about from the very beginning of when they learn and think about taking us all the way through their journey, their actual travel with us, and when they're continuing on. It all reflects an impression, and also every step of the way there is a service element there. And at the starting point of all of this and to determine what the customer's priorities are, we ask them. We conducted customer and employee research. Important to talk to our own employees. They're out there on the front line. They're listening. They hear it. They see it. They have opinions about it as well. We conducted focus groups with frequent and infrequent rail and bus customers, with our bus operators, rail station managers, call center representatives, as well as Metro Access customers, and we also did intercept interviews with tourists. So to the comment Mr. Downs this morning that you talked about, we could do a model such as that related to the Smart Trip program to go out and actually just ask people. And that is what we did with tourists. The next page, the approach that we took our learning from what our customers said, what their expectations were, and frequent and infrequent and visitors. We listened to our own employees, and from that we take a perceptions or big themes. When you do focus groups, it's not necessarily a one-for-one, but general areas and particular topics, if they come up, that will tell you that those are the areas that, you know, that are important to them. We took a look, everyone at this table took a look at all the work that they had going on in their respective areas to identify where we needed further action, where we needed more work, and then we put together respective action plans. And in addition to that, an important piece of the program is how we will measure ourselves. And as the general manager said, this is an ongoing and expected to be evolving program. As we finish up on one project, there will be others that come along. And just as we are challenged in the area of safety to continually improve, we should also have that commitment to customer service. So in the terms of measurements, we put together two programs, which I'll talk more about. One is our Mystery Rider program, which has been launched and has been underway since January. We have some of the findings that we'll talk about further on in here weaved into the presentation. But also the next major research initiative that we will kick off is a customer satisfaction index. So important that we take the focus group learnings, that we work at a department level, at a program level. We put together the satisfaction index. We know what the priorities are, what we want to ask about. Similarly, with the Mystery Rider program, the trip reports and the items that we are reviewing are based upon the priorities identified by the customers. Next page. So let us start with what customers view favorably about Metro and really what they appreciate. We heard that on the rail side, it's clean, safe, it is reliable, and it is more preferred or much preferred over the car. People that are traveling with us prefer to come by train, and in general, the quote that really captured it for in terms of reliability is the one that you see there, which is more on time than not. On the bus side, it's a little different, a little bit of a different environment. Bus customers call our service affordable, inexpensive. It is somewhat social, or there is a community element to bus travel. And customers talk about how they see the same people every day. They get to know them personally. It's like they're going from their neighborhood and they're with their neighbors to a certain point, and then ultimately they go to their destination. Some called it door-to-door service. They catch up with their friends. I recall one session someone said, I have a much better view than the rail customers. You know, they like looking out the window and so on. And it's convenience, and they really like the new shiny buses that we have. Metro access, they enjoy the convenience, our new vehicles, and the door-to-door service. And the service comes across as being particularly important at a quality of life measure, that it gives our Metro access riders and our customers independence. They're no longer a reliance or having to depend on friends or families to take them to the doctor or appointments or, you know, for other social engagements, that they have an alternative. And for some, it means that they are not left alone in many cases. So it really is all about independence and quality of life. Next slide. So there were really five major themes and five areas of action that we're going to focus on. And what I'll do is I will take you through the findings and the learnings about those five areas, and then each of my colleagues will take over and talk about the action plans in those areas. So first, just generally overall frontline service delivery.
the people-to-people part primarily of our delivery. In the stations, we'll start with rail first. The one person that our customers see in our stations that it really is an ambassador, if you will, is our station managers. And their presence is viewed first as a primary to customer safety and security. They look to them when there are disruptions or there are problems to know that they are there handling the situation and looking out for our customers. When it comes to person-to-person service delivery, they see them more as helping tourists rather than your frequent travelers. And they see them helping tourists to get fare cards or navigate the system. There is inconsistency and perceived inconsistency in quality of person-to-person service delivery. There were some station managers that were praised in the focus groups and who know their customers on a daily basis. And there were others who said that the people that they see are unavailable and disconnected. And some of that came through also the mystery rider data, because that's something that we've developed together on whether to check whether the station managers are available to customers. So that the inability to be there to help customers was, if they needed something, was an issue. From the station manager's side, they feel overwhelmed because, particularly during incidents, because they are one person. And when we have problems, the platforms fill up, the stations fill up, and they need help. They feel like they need help. They also recognize, though, on the person-to-person delivery, unprompted in their focus group, they said that there are people who do not live up to a quality standard for service to customers. They need information. They say that if they just need to get more information in order to give customers information, and they did not feel as though they were getting the kind of information they need to provide service. In the trip itself, the thing that came through, I think, is related to a lot of the age of our fleet, which is the stains that are in the cars, which give the perception that the cars are not, tidy and clean and so on. So, with that, I want to turn it to Dave Kubitschek.
Can I say one? Mm-hmm. I passed it along, I think, to Barbara and maybe somebody else, but I'm really appreciative of the efforts that you all are making about the Series 1000 cars and the grab bars, the stuff that whatever the residual was of the material around the grab bars. A lot of people didn't even want to touch it, and it left a lasting impression about a shabby environment, and I'm glad to see a number of them being stripped of that stuff.
I like your part. How are we growing environmental organisms that are not registered?
Yes.
So, yes, we are stripping those things down. I appreciate the compliment and support. And definitely, staff are trying to do our best to get these things, cleaned up. And I think whenever we eventually hear in about a year and a half or this time next year, when the 7K shows up, you're going to see a reflection and approach of what the image and the input from this group here and the expectations that we're placing upon ourselves and what we've got to deliver. It's not just about living up to it. It's about we must do it. So if I could, on the station manager side, I wanted to just kind of give a little bit of historical background, because there's a systemic issue here that's been around this position for a long time. It was a position of a station manager where it was the catch-all if we could not address labor issues or employee issues, or if somebody got demoted, they would put that person into a station manager location. That's a practice that's been happening for probably 30 years. It's very deep-seated, and I will say this much. There are a lot of good station managers, so I don't want to say that they're all bad, but that is the perception. The discussion around the station managers on my part really started with the union as well, to get the perception of not only what the employees were saying, but what the union executive management what they perceive. Because every time they would come to us and they wanted to cut a deal, they would go, well, let's just put them in the station side. And I'm going, I don't think that's the right representation of the workforce. And maybe we just need to deal with the employee issue instead of, you know, trying to hide. And so that'll be an ongoing effort. But that's the philosophy and the approach as we're going forward. Because as Barbara said, they're truly ambassadors. You know, they really don't manage a station per se. I mean, there are so many other departments that are there. But their job is to get people, you know, to and from or through as quickly and uneventful as possible. So one of the things that we did is that the traditional, we found also that we had station managers have been around for 20 years that had never been talked with. Or they had training, they only had training, you know, one time. Or if there was an emergency action, then all of a sudden we blitzed everybody and it was just a one and done. That's not the right way to foster good employee morale, you know, and or support. So it's about an investment. So one of the things we've done internally of rail transportation is we have a specific person and a few people that are assigned. Nothing but all they do is think about is stations. And, for example, we went through elevator and escalator configuration control. How are these units supposed to be operating? Do the station managers really understand what's taking place? Putting these tools directly at their fingertips. Even though they might be pressed by somebody, they say, no, per rule, per procedure, this is what we follow. And they do it consistently, because that was one of the things that I got a lot of feedback is, Mr. Kubicek, every time something happens, we change a rule. Why can't we address a few of the people, but let us operate the system the way that we know that needs to be done on a regular basis? Because it's hampering our customer service. So that's an example. Now, the station manager training, this is from an outside firm. We brought somebody in that was just really about customer focus, had them put together a curriculum. And it's not just about the station managers. All of the ARTRA staff will eventually go through this process. So it's train operators, it's line supervision, it's management. It's establishing that we are here to provide a service to the best of our ability. And there's one goal, one focus, one mission on that. We can talk about the numbers. You know, those are pretty straightforward. We're going to get through this. I mean, it is embedded. It's even been embedded into our new training programs for whenever we bring on new train operators or new station managers. It's also being embedded whenever we do refreshers or, reclassifications and stuff. So there's a lot more follow-up and stuff that's taking place that I think is very, very important. Another thing on the station managers, felt very isolated and a lot of times didn't know, you know, where they were at and involved. So one of the things that we did is we have so much information in this agency. Some people look at it, some people don't. Some people read it paper, some people, you know, like it electronically and such. So on our rail transportation side, we put in a website that basically is specifically for the station managers. They got a question, they got a concern. They can put it in there. It really responded a lot of good things that took place. Now, the other thing that took place is I looked collectively at all of the departments that work for me. We kind of shrunk everything down to say, okay, if you want to enter into to find out information, go through this site, because we were finding conflicting information as well. And so when you employees want the information, they just want it once, a singular time, and directed in focus. So that in itself has helped. The other thing that we've done behind the scenes is at some of our yards, we're starting to put computers and stuff in there. We're finding in the break rooms and stuff that employees are actually spending time where they'll go in and they'll log to look at what's happening into the system, you know, what's taking place. So we're putting up pictures, we're putting up rules and procedures, and so we're getting a lot of inquiries and stuff what's taking place. So the station manager at the kiosk can log in, but also it's the other employees that might not be directly at the station all the time, because it's a collective effort, because the operators, line supervision, together collectively, we've got to pull forward. I can also say a little bit on the union negotiation side, not to go into great details, but we're talking about the quality and the type of station manager going forward, the expectations of what we're looking for out of this skill set. And it's not critical of any individual, but it's just the expectation and our commitment to provide that quality service. On the rolling stock side, again, you know, the 7000 series, we're not going to have padded panels on the grab rail behind the seats. You know, the seats, the flooring and stuff is going to be resilient. It's truly about a different environment, a different exposure. Still within the same dynamic envelope, but a different experience. And with that, that came with a lot of, you know, a lot of input from all of our folks. The 5 and 6,000 series rail cars, we've got a bunch of cars that we've already tested. We've already kind of made up our mind that we're starting to replace the resilient floor. And, you know, we'll do it on a per schedule basis, but we're going to be migrating away from all the carpet. Now, the 1,000s and 4,000s, naturally, we won't go out of our way because as those things get closer to retirement and stuff, we don't want to be just wasteful of money and everything else. But the 5s and the 6s are the ones that we'll really start focusing on. And that's, and we've got the products tested, everything is implemented and working accordingly. I'll halt for now. I know the PAs were talked about earlier. There's another page or so in there that some other folks will talk about, and I've got a few more information items on that as well.
I just wonder if I could mention, I'm really pleased to see you working on the station managers and giving them more information and better equip them to do their jobs. Many times when I get negative comments about, you know, people that work for WMATA, and you sort of ask people, well, you know, who are you talking about? It seems to very often be station managers, and they appear to be extremely important in how people perceive the entire workforce. So I commend you for that effort. I think it's really important.
Next slide. On frontline service delivery on the bus side, customers see the main job of the bus operator is to drive the bus. And that's good, yeah. They said that first and foremost. But also to be the presence or the official presence for safety and security, their own personal safety and security on the bus. When it comes to helping passengers, inconsistent delivery, again, some really great bus operators out there, some that are indifferent. And I would say that most of the bus customers, what came through is that they just want to be acknowledged. They recognize that the bus driver has to drive the bus and there's much going on. Through some of the mystery rider reports, we've picked up some inconsistent appearances, which Jack is following up on, name badges not there, things of that order. From the bus operator's standpoint, all the noise that goes on to them is a distraction. So when all the chatter's going on and they're trying to deal with the traffic, it is an issue for them. The fare machines, which were inoperable, the focus group work was in the fall, so there's been software upgrades that have happened to ease that. But at that moment in time, we were really struggling, so that came through pretty strong. Bus schedules. The discussion was that the schedules are not accurate. They don't reflect what's out here on the road and the kind of traffic and the volume that we're seeing that's happening. But the bus operators are interested in going through customer service program. So with that, I think Jack can talk about that very topic.
Thank you, Barbara. And as Barbara mentioned earlier, this is not necessarily all new. These are enhanced programs that continue on an annual basis, and we'll speak to some of the things that we are going to upgrade to try to make improvements. As Barbara mentioned, customers have talked about service delivery by bus operators. Bus operators talk about dealing with customers. The union's concerned about making sure that operators are trained on how to deal with customers so that we can avoid hostile conflict and improve communication efforts. So we do have customer service training as part of our new operator 8-week training program. It's in there. About 18 months ago, we started a refresher training course, a one-day program for operators. It's included in that program, and we've got over 900 operators that are going through that. But we felt that with all these comments that we still needed to go further. So we have developed a program that is now currently developed, and we will in July train the trainers to do the training, which we're going to do at our bus facilities. In August, we want the superintendents and the service operations managers to know what we're going to train the operators on, so we want to get that information to them. And in September through December, we expect to train the first 500 bus operators on an eight-hour course, 2 hours a day, done at the bus facilities. It's going to, the training is going to include attempting to defuse hostile situations, listening skills so that they are listening to the passengers, speak about health and welfare, health and wellness for themselves, working with customers with disabilities, make sure we're lowering, kneeling the bus, using the ramp when it's requested, dealing with emergencies so we know what to do in the event of the need for a rail bridge or there's something extreme going on within the region, coping with stress because it is a stressful job. We still are operating buses in one of the most congested areas of the country, and just further attempts to communicate effectively. So we're looking forward to starting this in September with the bus operators themselves, continuing that throughout the year, and we hope that the survey results and the responses back from our operators are that it is an enhancement to make their job easier and to make the customer's trip more pleasant. On the standpoint of enhancing onboard security, Chief Taborn mentioned earlier this morning about grants and installing cameras. One of those projects we received near the end of last year, the grant approval to install closed-circuit television on the remainder of the bus fleet. As we've reported over the last year or so, we have cameras on a, we had camera CCTV on a number of buses, but we also had a number of systems on buses that didn't function. So we have a contract for 654 systems to be installed on buses to replace systems that are not working and to install systems on buses that had no system. And I am happy to report that we're probably less than 60 buses away and should have all that done by the end of the month. So we should have CCTV in addition to drive cam on the entire fleet, and we anticipate maintaining that at least a 98% working level. So there's contractors will support those systems, and CCTV has so many values. It helps counsel when there's an issue. It helps safety when there's issues that we can analyze. Operators are involved in an incident. We're able to pull the tape. When we first put these systems in a number of years ago, they used to be good for about 30 or 40 hours, 30, 45 hours of retention, and now we're up to closer to 30 to 45 days. So we should have a good ability to go back in and check an incident that happened last week or 2 or 3 weeks ago if it happens to come up, which is something that we didn't have in the past. Installing bus shields. Again, this is a subject that we've talked about in the past. When we purchased the 30-foot replacement buses, from Orion. Orion had a shield that works. It's an optional shield that meets all the standards and requirements. We've ordered 52. The 52 are here, and as of yesterday, we had 16 of those in service out of our Southern Avenue garage. The first 26 go to Southern. We're trying to get all of those sent to the facility and in place, and hopefully have all 52 in service over the next 30 or 45 days. We're also looking at one of our commitments was to install shields in our buses that are going through the midlife overhaul. We still are trying to come up with a design for those specific buses, which are all of the same model. We're still hopeful that we'll have that design finished by the end of the summer and be able to put those in service over the remainder of the year. And then working with Barbara and Lynn and others, we'll be working on surveys from operators, surveys on passengers as to the impacts, the positives, the negatives, and take a look at how we go forward with further security devices. One of the positives in the FY13 budget is the police, transit police will be assigning at least 30 additional operators to bus. Again, operators, customers want to see uniforms. They want to see security. The chief uses uniformed and undercover. And I think it's very effective, and I know it's very appreciated from our side of the house, and we look forward to that deployment. So in addressing schedule challenges, we're rolling out, in April, the better bus improvements have rolled out, and I'd like to think that on an annual basis that over the last couple of years that we have been making bus better. The board has been very supportive in the procurement of new vehicles. The board, last year, we came forward with a zero net change in services that we wanted to reduce some services. We wanted to increase some services. We were able to do it mid-year without any impact on expenses or revenues or subsidy. We think it does require public hearing, but we have a plan to come back to you in September with another plan for zero-based adjustments. We think there are areas that we can reduce some service, make some adjustments, or eliminate duplication, and then reapply those dollars in a sense that will improve services in sections of the region. We think this is a good, Dave talks about state of good repair, we talk about state of good operations. Things change, construction changes, lanes change, projects happen, and we think we can come back to you annually with a relatively shorter list of things that we can do to save money and ways that we can reinvest that money, and we'd like to do that somewhat outside of the budget process, but do it on an annual basis.
I think it's really important about having that be a regularized process that everybody expects every 12 months. I think it's important to institutionalize that instead of kind of pushing it off at times. We get in a hole about adjusting bus service. Travel patterns change, people change, demographics change over time, and it's really important about the ability to adjust bus service. I think it's great you're doing it. We just need to make sure that it's institutionalized, that it's we have an expectation as a board that it's done every year.
Well, we have some preliminary plans on certain routes in each of the jurisdictions. We'll be sharing those with jurisdictional staff, but we're bringing it to you in September for consideration. And I'll let you know that we'll probably be requesting a public hearing to address some of the changes that might have to take place. In addition to that program, we, again, thank you to the board. I know Rush Plus is the big push for June 17th, but also on June 17th, we're adding service to assist in Rush Plus, but we're also making some major adjustments. There's a $5 million program over fiscal year 13 to add service to priority corridor networks, add some priority corridor networks in December, make some other adjustments throughout the year. And again, it's the start. It's an annual process. We've been behind for a number of years, so we're going to, in the budget process, put together another plan, very similar to the plan that was approved by the board. And we certainly appreciate the opportunity to start initiating that service on June 17th. We'll be coming back with another plan. There's many areas where we feel that there's a need for focus. We have many routes that have on-time performance is critical, so we want to look at routes where we're below 80%. What can we do to make that happen? Are there routes that are way too long that we could actually shorten routes or split the route, do some things that we could improve on-time performance? We want to make sure we're looking at overcrowding. And the other area that we really want to look at are the routes where service is only about every 30 minutes and we have poor on-time performance. I mean, if you're there, if a bus is coming every 5 minutes, on-time performance isn't as critical if the bus is only coming every 30 minutes. So we want to look at those kind of services. Those are quite often the services that people are very dependent upon. We'd like them to be on time. We'd like to be able to make schedule adjustments. And as Barbara's list said, you know, customers would like to see us run on schedule as best possible. So we'll come forward with that. And the other area that we'll probably be looking at is weekend service. Weekend service is really, again, dependent riders that working on the weekends want their service to be as reliable. We have high ridership on weekends. We'd like to concentrate on those areas. So I think when we come back with you as part of the next year's budget process, you will see some recommendations for some service changes, some additional services, some modifications to services to try to address those specific areas. When we develop these plans, we've made a great effort. Our scheduling people, our planning people are out in the facilities now spending more time with our operators. They really are the source of the information that we need to digest to try to make the recommendations. We have a hotline to bus operators. They can call, pick up the phone, call immediately, leave us input as to schedule adjustments. The union is, they want their operators to be good to customers, but they also want, you know, helpful if they're on time. So we're working with the union as to the components that they see that we can do to make things better. And again, the customers tell us they want us to be on time. We want to be on time, and we want to do everything we can. We think it's incremental. That's why we think it's going to be an annual process, try to buy it off as much as we can, as much as we can afford, on an annual basis. So we look forward to bringing this back to you in September and moving through a program that we hopefully addresses most of these action items that are in response to the things that surveys have shown.
Next slide. Metro Access customers, in addition to what I mentioned earlier, they had a lot of praise for the drivers and the reservation process. The frustration comes from dispatch, hearing what dispatch is saying to the drivers when they have to call to find out where their ride is. It's with dispatch. So that's where some of the conflict comes up. There's also inconsistent experience around what door-to-door service means and whether or not you get true door-to-door service. And as we heard during the budget period, confusion around fares and why am I I'm taking the same trip over and over, but why is my fare changing with the time when I'm going at a different time? Christian himself has talked to a lot of the employees, and some of the learnings there are, some of it has to do with, I think, I would boil it down to communication and not an understanding about policies and frustrations that arise on the customer side, then become in conflict with the employees, either on the phone or a lack of understanding or communication, but it just gets tangled up is the best way I would describe it. And expectations, high expectations, but maybe not knowing truly what the policy is about a particular issue. And also, on the employee side, punctuality of our customers, this gets down to being there during the time frame when the driver is supposed to show up to pick up. And if not, then since we have a policy where we don't strand travelers, we have to go back. And it just complicates the routes and the rides and the whole dispatching process. And ride-sharing issues. If dispatch has to group a couple of our customers together, a big frustration around why I can't get that ride myself, and if you just took me myself, you would get me there a lot sooner and much more direct. So, Christian, you want to talk about some of the actions you're taking?
Absolutely. Thank you, Barbara. First, obviously, what makes paratransit unique is that the customer has a lot more one-on-one interaction with our personnel. The relationship with the operator is fairly obvious because when they board the vehicle, that starts at the door with Metro Access, and the operator is taking the customer from the door all the way out to the vehicle. If the wheelchair lift is needed, then there's assistance required there, as well as securing the customer once they're inside the vehicle before they're even able to begin the trip. So that relationship is important. We were pleased to hear that the overall feedback was that the operators are getting fairly high marks from the customers, at least in terms of those types of interactions. But the understanding of the door-to-door policy is another matter, because each environment where the customers are taking the trip is going to have some unique characteristics. You know, a door that's within eyesight of the vehicle is one thing. A door, if the customer's expecting the operator to go beyond that point to the interior of a building or somewhere where they're not able to monitor the other customers that might be waiting on the vehicle during the boarding process, that's outside of the policy, and that's something that we need to do a good job of continually communicating that from even the point of reservation to say, you know, this is what we're able to do. And, of course, because ADA does allow customers to bring a personal care assistant, many of them do. They bring someone along to help them with the aspects of the trip that Metro Access is not able to provide. The other individuals that the customer has really close interaction with are those who work in the call center, those who take the reservations, and those who dispatch the trips. Again, high marks on the reservations process, which, again, that's very good news. It sounds like that customers are pleased with the extent to which the reservation agent listens carefully to what the customer wants, records the reservation accurately, and make sure that there's kind of a mental handshake there about what's going to happen before the service begins. But dispatch is another story, because dispatch is the part of the call center that has to interact with the customer if we're running late. If there's any type of inquiry about the status of the trip while it's in progress, they have to call in and speak with our dispatch center. And the dispatch operators, in order to answer those questions, even though we do have GPS technology and we can generally see where most of our vehicles are, just because they're nearby from a distance standpoint doesn't mean that they're going to arrive soon in a time standpoint, depending on where they are. So our process involves calling the operator many times and asking for an ETA. And that process, there are a lot of moving parts to that. And so sometimes the information that comes back is either delayed or, you know, we're being optimistic that the ride is going to arrive sooner than it actually does. And so that is something that we're working on from all sides, getting the operator to communicate earlier if they encounter difficulty, and getting the dispatchers and others in the call center to be much more precise about the information that they're putting out. In order to keep those skills sharpened, we do record all calls and all interactions between the dispatchers and the reservation agents and our customers, and we allow the agents to listen to those recordings. If we hear something that we think is not stellar customer service, then we sit and give the employee the opportunity to hear and reflect upon that call so that they can do a better job in the future. There is sensitivity training provided to all members of the call center that does include participation by our customers. So we actually have actual customers with disabilities sitting with the staff, talking about what's important, talking about issues that they've encountered to help our team really be responsive to what matters the most. That sensitivity training is provided at the beginning of employment, but there is also an annual refresher for sensitivity training, and it's also touched upon every month in our safety meetings as well. So customer service training for Metro Access employees is a combination of not just emphasizing courtesy, but also sensitivity to the unique ways that customers with disabilities communicate and are able to process information, and that's very important. We do recertify certain key job skills. Obviously, the securement of a wheelchair is one of the critical skills that every operator needs to be able to perform flawlessly every time. And so what we do have as part of our annual training is that there is a requirement that the operator demonstrate a full command of that ability in order to be certified to continue as a Metro Access operator thereafter. We are also working on developing leaders in the paratransit environment, in dispatch and reservations, and even personnel in the field, supervisors who are out monitoring the service. We really want to develop a career path, and sometimes that doesn't happen in a service that's entirely outsourced. And we've really taken a longer-term view of the service to say, you know, there are people who are choosing paratransit as a career, and we want them to do that. We want them to stay because, obviously, as time passes, they gain greater proficiency in meeting special needs, and they can be a great benefit to the customer and to their fellow employees. So we've really placed new emphasis on that as well. I would also add that the branding of the service is very important, and I know you've all had a recent opportunity to see the newest member of the Metro Access fleet, the MV1, which there's a lot of excitement about that vehicle for a number of different reasons. But, you know, the very recognizable paint scheme that matches that of Metrobus, it's very clear that it's a Metro vehicle showing up, and that gives the comfort, it gives the customer some comfort that they are, in fact, boarding a Metro Access vehicle and that the person who's with that vehicle is familiar with their needs and how to serve them. I also would like to join in thanking the board for the support that you've given us to keep the Metro Access fleet at a good age and a good state of repair as well. That's been critical to us, and I think that's made a great difference in terms of the reliability of the service and also customer perception. I also would like to give some thanks to Barbara Richardson and now Lynn Bowersox and Allison Simon, who have helped us to dig deeper in surveying to get meaningful information about not just whether the customers are satisfied with the service, but the choices they're making as customers with disabilities to use paratransit versus bus and rail, how the various programs are working together. And we're gaining information and research that we haven't had in the past. And I think that's going to be critical in informing our strategic decisions about the service going forward. So the only item on this list that doesn't have a check mark next to it is the fare calculator, which is under development right now, and that's going to be completed at the end of the month. And this, of course, I know we've had substantial discussion about this. This is an important first step in helping to make the fare structure for Metro Access more understandable to the customer, and we'll certainly be providing you with more information as that rolls out.
On the next piece, the next major theme that we heard about was communications, and I was just before you a few months back talking about all the initiatives that we have on the communication side, but I will just say, and I won't go through everything, what it comes down to is the customer wants to be informed at every step of the journey and wants as much information as possible. And that is the challenge that we face in trying to make sure that we are delivering on that at every single step. Some of the highlights, though, while they're in the system, the announcements, and we'll talk a little bit about that, and the clarity of that on trains and buses in the stations. The passenger information displays are very useful. A lot of people depend upon them. They find that there's too much information on them. They want them to be used for when is the train coming and what's the arrival time. Where's the bus? The detours related customers not knowing exactly where the bus is going, and having a little bit different definition of bus on time performance, meaning you can be a little late up to 5 minutes, but you can't be early. So you know that because for them that's not on time. And then as I talked about earlier with respect to Metro Access about where is my ride and maybe a lack of understanding the 30-minute window and getting an estimated time of arrival. So some continuation on that. On the next slide, you'll see, I won't repeat it, but it is all about the journey and getting information. And one area that we have not spent time, I haven't talked to you about, is the call center. And when we did research, we found out that once customers get somebody on the line to plan a trip in our Metro call center or to lodge a complaint, they find that the interaction is very positive, that the people there, when they answer the phone, treat them kindly, but that the performance, or they could find that they could not get them on the phone. So we'll talk a little bit about work there. So it's my pleasure to introduce the new AGM, Lynn Bowersox.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
As you know, we've been expanding communications tools for our riders, and we've been delivering a lot of new electronic tools, including Metro Bus Alerts for the first time and expanded Metro Rail Alerts. And that hopefully gives customers an opportunity to learn about what's going on in the system even before they arrive at a bus stop or a train station. But what we did hear from them, and what we heard from station managers too, is that upon arrival, it's sometimes the case where people who live on their PDAs don't know what's going on because they haven't had time to check, and then there's other people who, either by choice or through lack of access, don't live on PDAs, and I call them the unplugged. And some of us choose to be unplugged at sometimes, but we still need that information when we arrive at stations. We've had a couple of opportunities to take a look at how we address both audiences. We're doing both old-school tactics and some high-tech tactics. The old-school tactics, we have a new column from the general manager. It'll appear roughly monthly in the Express, which is a free distribution paper on the system. It's a great plan for us because it allows us to get out more paper messaging without adding paper to the trains, which, as you may know, is a constant struggle for us in terms of cleanliness. I will mention, too, and give credit to the Riders Advisory Council. This is consistent with the suggestion that came from them, and it came at a time when we were able to make this happen through a marketing program. So, again, it's another way to reach riders on a regular basis with important messages. We also have a new signage program that's coming. We're pilot testing it next month. We've been working with Rail and with the folks who are focusing on information in stations. You will see these frames. You will know exactly what I'm talking about as soon as you see the first ones in Vienna and in Shady Grove and Metro Center. They're more than 6 feet tall. In fact, I'm going to have them lined up against Mr. Kubitschek. I think they're about his same height. They're going to be placed, installed in the station floors in these stations. They have three panels. One is about 18 by 36, and then two 8.5 by 11s. And in those frames, station managers are going to be able to place local station information that says, this weekend the station is closed because we're rebuilding, or this weekend we have single tracking because we're rebuilding, or this weekend there's something special going on downtown and this may affect parking. Things that customers in that station need to know. We're working with their station managers to give them printed materials so that information is accurate, clear, consistently communicated, but it will be displayed and they will be able to talk to their customers locally. Their customers want that, the station managers want that. So that's an old school tool. High tech tool. By the end of the year, we'll have 75 new electronic screens displayed in station locations just outside of kiosks. You've heard the complaint about PIDs, and the truth is, and Mr. Kubitschek will speak to this, I think, as well. The PIDs were designed to deliver train arrival information. It's supposed to tell you when the next train is coming, how many cars long that train is, and the destination of that train. It has four screens, and they rotate. And we've had more and more real-time data becoming available that we've been trying to deliver to our customers. And so those PIDs are working much harder than they were originally designed to do. And what we're saying is you give that customer every piece of information we now have. Elevator outages, track work that's coming, any kind of service information, severe thunderstorm warnings. We want the PID to tell you that. Well, the PIDs aren't really capable of that. We've overburdened them. So these new electronic screens that will look like large, you know, big screen TVs outside the kiosk will allow you to get that information before you enter the fare gate. It will be very similar to what we put on our website. You will get customer alert information. You will know if there's a severe thunderstorm warning, if there's a big detour because of flooding, if the Cherry Blossom Festival and Parade has created issues for you at your location. You will know that from these big screens. And Dave's group and Rob's group are implementing that on an accelerated basis, and we're developing the content for that now, and we'll be seeking further employee and customer input into that content as we go. On the bus side, of course, not to be outdone, we have both old school and high-tech information improvements that we're doing on the bus side. By the end of this year, we're going to be integrating NextBus with the new Metro Bus Alerts, which will allow us to deliver more real-time information about the status of bus service to customers through their PDAs, their apps, and at dynamic signs that will be located at bus stops. The first 90 will be installed in the coming fiscal year, 2013, approximately 100 in the year thereafter. And then there are four option years to exercise that would come to a total of 800 dynamic bus stop signs between fiscal 15 and 18 if fully deployed. The RFP has been issued. We expect an award in September, so that program is moving forward. With respect to the old school, we've installing approximately 1,500 new bus case signs each year going forward, and we have new sign flags, which are larger print, a little clearer and easier to read. So we have more information coming both in terms of the devices that our bus customers carry and to the stops where they're waiting for buses. On the next slide. The discussion this morning in the safety committee was very timely with respect to the clarity and consistency of in-station announcements. Let me talk about that in three different buckets. With respect to clarity, if you're in the stations this week, you'll hear a new Rush Plus announcement. That Rush Plus announcement, actually there are two, one's about to be loaded. They were recorded, pre-recorded by some of our staff who have professional broadcast backgrounds. They're professional voices, and they deliver very, very clear messages. I think you'll agree when you hear them that it improves the audibility of the messages. We're going to do more of that. We're also going to provide more frequent announcements in stations when there are service disruptions. And Dave can talk about sort of the science around that. Essentially, it goes from 10 minutes roughly between announcements down to 1 to 2 minutes for announcements when we have operational issues in the system. And then lastly, we are doing technology upgrades. There are certain PA systems, which it's not a matter of the clarity or the delivery of the announcement. It really is a technology issue. And we have 37 of 51 underground stations that are underway there. And I will just turn it to Dave to add to that.
Briefly on the station announcements, one of the things that we find out during normal operations, you know, everything's good. People are just passing and going through. But a lot of observations, and this has been also just watching it via CCTV whenever we're monitoring monitoring the incident, is the frequency like at core stations. A lot of times there would be a canned announcement every 5 minutes. But if you've got four lines that are merging at one point, and you're only hearing an announcement once every 5 minutes, it creates a lot of confusion and does a lot of overburden of staff and stuff. So with some of the newer technology that we've got out there with the new PA system, one, we can do localized PA announcements at specific stations from the control center as well as from the station manager kiosk area, as well as they also have an ability now to have a handheld wireless mic. So that's very important. So it's not only the frequency, but it's also to be able to identify in these local regions and areas. And another thing that we've done, tying in with what Lynn has talked about on our part, it's even the announcements. It's good to have a male voice do certain announcements, then rotate with a female. Because if we're doing canned announcements, after a couple of weeks, it just becomes the same thing, and you're saying the same message, but it's the same person always talking about that. We've also tried to, we piloted this a little bit on our part. We've got some station managers that do a pretty good job, you know, as far as their talking and their communication skills and their outgoing, but also the train operators. And what we've done here recently, we brought in a couple of train operators as well to do some canned announcements and stuff for us. And it's been quite an interesting response with staff, because now I have a train operator walking into a control center, which they probably have never seen, and then they're sitting right next to the communications people, and they're carrying their voice. And, you know, they're doing a great job of projecting. And so there's a little bit of a internal competition that's probably, you know, very healthy. The other thing that we've done on some of our communications initiatives is getting some of the staff into the field. It's one thing to be sitting in the control center all the time, but you just made that announcement. What does it really sound like? How are you conducting yourself? And you really have to be on key all of the time. And then the other component is also being very sensitive now on the way in which they're making the announcements. When you have an emergency event, naturally you have to be behind a mic and you have to be very, very good. But we've also found with some of the technology where they've done some of the recordings where we've found a breakdown in the way that they're actually doing some of the pre-recorded messages, and that hurts the system in itself as well. So those are just a few other things that are taking place as well.
Could I say one job? It would be great at some point to have a fix for the PIDs about single tracking when the trains disappear from the PID.
Yes, sir. On the PID system itself, as Lynn has communicated, it's been a great product. It's definitely limited, and we're looking into what is really the right investment, and also looking into how the system, you know, really works. And I think as we continue to move forward, look at our capital, there's some systems that I've looked at abroad that provide, you know, the real-time information, and I think that's the direction which we're going to be going. But we need to get things, you know, clarified. But we have to have an environment where it's not always relying on programming and human intervention all the time. We really need, and the technology is out there for the systems to react real-time, and that's the direction which we're looking at.
The other anomaly is NextBus at terminal stations. If the operator doesn't leave and the NextBus indicator is set, bus is leaving in 1 minute, and then there's no operator, the bus actually disappears from NextBus, and it doesn't come back on, and that's for the entire line and all of the customers. It doesn't come back on until the bus actually moves. And if that's 5 or 10 minutes at each terminal, that means that NextBus is simply going offline.
Well, I think by installing next bus signs at the stations, which is our goal in FY beginning around the first of the year, we anticipate that that will help us and the operator improve departure time and try to get things started so that it will show up on the next bus system. And again, on next bus, with the onboard technology, I think I've been saying for the last year, in 13, we're going to start replacing equipment. Well, 13 is almost here. We are going to do some testing, but we will be replacing equipment that will get next bus predictions up to down to 30 seconds rather than every 2 minutes. So we with the additional signage, the additional equipment on the vehicles, I think that we will see a significant enhancement for our customers.
The other two areas I wanted to just briefly highlight for the committee, the call centers, which Barbara mentioned. You know, there's been a process that grew out of an assessment, and it's working. We're seeing improvements with our information call center. The rate of calls captured has increased from 82% in 2011 to 97% as of April this year. We're also answering calls from customers much faster. In fact, the speed of answer rate has improved from 30 seconds to just 17 seconds. So our customers are getting better responsiveness for us when they call in. Next up will be improving the quality and speed of responses around correspondence, whether they come in electronically or through the mail. And that's what we're taking a look at now. And last item is around employee communications. I will tell you that the way we think about this is not dissimilar to the way Rob and Dave think about a state of good repair. We historically did not have a formal employee communications program at Metro, and so it's been about building an infrastructure, a communications infrastructure that reaches 11,000 employees in a company that's very geographically diverse, and with employees in the field and in different facilities. So we have done many, many things. And just on the screen, it highlights a few of those on this slide. We have multiple channels in place at this point, including electronic and paper outreach. We have the Metro Weekly, which is an electronic newsletter. It's very well read. We've expanded it to include regular safety tips, human resources news, agency-wide policy and procedures, so we simplify those for folks. And our most recent addition is a quarterly column from the Office of Inspector General on how employees can improve business controls. So we think that that's becoming a more and more informative communication tool. The GM communicates regularly through a weekly email message. It's printed out and it's posted on bulletin boards for people who don't regularly check email. He hosted an employee town hall meeting this spring. We videotaped that and put it on the intranet for the employees who couldn't be in the room. He is doing another one this fall to provide one-on-one communication with employees and to hear about their concerns. We have an e-listserv now for our employees. We reach about two-thirds of them, around 7,000 employees, plus we have a contractor email listserv for Metro Access folks. We initiated a recognition program called Kudos to You, which celebrates employees based on customer feedback for outstanding service. They're featured on our intranet. They get an award. Their photo is taken. And we publicize internally letters from customers that celebrate employees who really do, you know, sort of set the gold standard for customer service. And then finally, we launched this year a safety communications campaign, which we're coming back to the board and briefing the safety committee on next month, and we look forward very much to do that. It's really been a focus to get our employees thinking about and talking about and living the values around wearing protective equipment and taking personal responsibility for safety, both of which are intended to support the GM's goals around injury reduction. Barbara?
Okay, the third theme was around security issues, and I will say, first of all, customers recognize that there's been a lot of focus on safety itself, and the issue around security is, first of all and foremost, about the importance of people of authority being seen and available in the system. And it's not just police officers, but as we heard, it's bus operators, it's station managers, it may be even Metro representatives doing work in the stations, but just there being a presence of individuals is very important to customers, people of authority who they can look to and look for help from if they need. Specific issue that did arise rise is related to particular times of travel in particular locations on bus and rail, and there seemed to be a consensus around it being related to youth behavior issues. After school, on the weekends, it is not becoming, I know the chief has spent a lot of time on it, but it came up in the focus groups, one of the main concerns, I would say. So with that, I think I'll just turn it over to the chief. He had a lot to say this morning, but he may want to talk about this issue a little bit.
Okay. Thanks very much, Barbara. If we can go to the next slide, we can go to the action plan. There's a variety of different action plans that we feel will enhance security throughout the system. A lot of that is information sharing. A lot of that is reaching out abroad to finding out what other transit agencies are doing with similar problems that we may be encountering. But one of the mainstays of that effort to enhance security is the daily coordination with our respective law enforcement agencies in this region, both the Metropolitan Police, Prince George's County, Montgomery County. We are in contact with them on a daily basis, oftentimes to find out what's going on. Barbara indicated that the majority of the problems that we encounter involve the young people, and that's absolutely true. Probably 65% of the crimes that we experience are related to young people and their behavior. So working with the Metropolitan Police, finding out during the school session when a particular school may have a grudge against another school and the central locations in which they may meet up, say, for instance, Minnesota Avenue. We know that at certain periods of time, there's a convergence of over 1,000 students right there. So having that daily communications with the Metropolitan Police, determining in advance the possibility of some disruptive behaviors that may take place affords us the opportunity to be well-armed. And we do that, again, not just in this region, but we reach out to the other jurisdictions as well. Deployment of bus and rail. One of the things that we look at in order to be smarter in our approach to address security is what are the statistics telling us? What is the data revealing? When are things happening so that we can deploy our personnel to the best of our abilities at certain times and locations where we have good reasons to believe that crimes may be happening or we can safeguard our riding public? We utilize high-intensity targeted enforcement, working again with our jurisdictional partners that we can show a show of force and we can get out, pass out literature, let the public know that we're there and that we're doing things to make sure that they're safe. We are very grateful for the board, for the general manager, for the federal government. Through these efforts, both on bus and rail, we stand to add about 68 new sworn police officers and 13. When you factor in the additional 11 for special police, we also can better safeguard our bus divisions and our rail yards from any type of activities associated with that. Relative to community involvement, Metro is the vehicle through which we join communities, and I can guarantee you when we go in Montgomery County, Prince George's County, Alexandria, Arlington, everyone has a concern about crime or the perception of crime in and around the Metro, and they want to hear from us. So it's important that we coordinate again and collaborate with those jurisdictional agencies to tell our story as to how best we can protect the people who utilize our system, both bus, rail, and Metro access. Again, we participate in all these task force, the truancy, anti-bullying, anti-gang. When there's something that is important enough that jurisdictional agencies reach out, we step up to the plate, and we want to be a partner with that. We're very grateful to Barbara Richardson. I think that there's a new focus group that's being spearheaded, and I think it is targeting youth. So we need to find out from the young people why they may behave the way they behave in the Metro system, and what is it that we can do to sort of address some of that behavior if, in fact, there's some peer pressure that we can learn from that they can go back and share that with their partners. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Barbara, it's the Octane company that's sponsoring this youth focus?
Yeah, we are working on doing some focus group with young people, and the important piece of this, of course, is that we don't try to communicate as adults talking to the young people, but that we understand how to reach them and what means and what messages that we can use to do that, and other community groups that we can work with. So I think that's a big step. It's you can't just mount a communications campaign and expect that you engage them if we don't understand what the motivations are. So that's good.
And I think that the general manager has afforded us the opportunity to be open and look at how we can improve. We've invited the regular street officers, because it's not just the officials that have the knowledge. The street officers come and they give us ideas and suggestions, so the strategies change periodically. We're proud that our general manager and leader joins us every other week in our MetroStat process, which again affords us the opportunity to find out if the strategy that was employed the last 2 weeks was working, if in fact we should continue that, or if we should decide to look for other ways of addressing a particular crime. And by bringing people together, we feel confident that the strategies may change, but we're looking for the effectiveness of the procedure that will result in people not being victims of crimes or properties being stolen.
The next area was fair collection, and I feel as though we spent a pretty good amount of time this morning, and so I don't want to cut Adam short, although he's kind of entertaining, or Raj, but I would just maybe just go quickly just say that there, you know, in last fall we got a lot of frustration around with the system and the cards and refund process, but I think a lot of the actions that we talked about this morning really addressed all of that. I'm not sure. Is there anything, Raj, that you would add to that in the interest of time? Anything else that is there anything that we hadn't talked about this morning?
Sure. I'll try not to repeat what Adam said. He did a great job of talking about the overall fair collection system and distribution enhancements we have made and we plan on making. I'll focus on a few specific things we have done to improve the performance of the smart trip equipment and enhance customer service or customer satisfaction, if you will. We have replaced all of the obsolete card readers or the smart trip targets on the high volume stations. This was done last fall, and by the end of next year, we plan on replacing all of the smart trip targets across the system. The second thing we have done is bus fare boxes. At times, they used to freeze up while somebody was trying to load value on that. That was a software issue, which we have fixed now. And we have made a few changes to the website, wherein if you lose your smart trip card or it's stolen, you don't have to make a phone call to the call center. You can go on the website, you can hotlist the card, and transfer the balance on your own. And if you're a rail customer, the balance gets transferred to the new card within a day. And if you travel by bus, it may take up 2 to 3 days on that. So that's a big improvement we have made. That kind of speaks to some of the last two bullets on the slide there. With those changes, we have reduced considerably the number of calls going to the call center. And the call center I'm talking about is the Smart Trip call center, which is different than the Metro call center, which Lynn talked about. The Smart Trip call center used to get about 40 to 45,000 calls per month. With these changes we have made now, the number of incoming calls have reduced to about 25 to 26,000. That's a considerable improvement because we pay the contractor based on the number of incoming calls. And also the call handle time. I do realize last December and early January there was problems with that. People had to wait for several minutes before they could get through. For the last 3 months now, the average wait time has been less than 30 seconds. So that's a pretty big improvement we've made. And as I said, Adam already talked about the smart benefit customers. There's no need for about 280,000 folks to go to the ticket vending machines now. And with the upcoming threshold auto loader, the Easy Pass concept on the website, that will further cut down the weight of the fare vending machines. So those are the few highlights I just wanted to address.
Thank you. Next slide. Another area was the station environment, and this is our final area. Some things here that would not be a surprise, and others, so escalators, elevators.
lighting, meaning want to see it brighter a little bit in the stations. Air conditioning, again, this was in the fall, so, you know, we had a pretty hot summer last year, so we were coming off of that summer. Also notice around the platforms when we have incidents and the sense of safety that people have around that. Some wayfinding issues, you know, the connection and the love with the map keeps coming through. They want more maps, more signage, wherever they possibly can have it, making it accessible to all people. So we, you know, we're going to take a look at some of that in the stations, too, and how we can maybe improve that. So Rob Troop will talk about the improvements that we have going on in the station environment right now.
Rob? Thank you, Barbara. Yeah, first of all, we understand how critical the elevators and escalators are to the rider's experience. We absolutely understand that, and I'm the DGMO. The GM remind me of that every morning. I get reports, and I'm appreciative of that. And, So we do understand. Again, we do understand, you know, how critical this is to the rider's experience. One of the things that was done, you know, we've established more resources out there. You know, we're entering into contract services with a group to be able to provide more resources, to be able to do better preventive maintenance or more preventive maintenance. And that's critical. It's not just the rehabs and it's just not the replacements, but it's also getting out there and doing the necessary maintenance on the elevators and escalators. It's absolutely critical to that. In addition, and David pointed out about how, you know, the station managers are being trained, you know, our ability to respond to incidences, you know, where the station managers can't reverse an escalator for one reason or another. Having more resources out there gives us a better opportunity to respond to that. Additionally, remote monitoring is important to us to be able to not just respond to issues, but also to be able to trend issues that we can get out there perhaps if we notice that to be able to fix problems before they become incidents out in the out on the right of way. So, you know, that's critical to us. The remote monitoring of the elevators are complete by FY14. There's some technology issues there, you know, between analog and digital, and being able to get the digital information over. So there is some technology issues that we have to take care of in order to get that. And again, we're just employing our own additional resources of Metro Force account to be able to take care of these. You know, to be able to again provide the required preventive maintenance activities under the prescribed cycle times. You know, we've done a very good job of doing that. You know, and what we have also done is reorganized to the extent that we have a greater level of supervision that can audit these preventive maintenance cycles and make sure that they're getting done. So, you know, we have better oversight of the technicians that are out there doing the work. And that's very critical to the work that's being done out there. Additionally, and thank you to the board and the GM for supporting the CIP moving forward with the replacements of the escalators. I think that's a significant item that helps us. You know, we have the 94 that we'll be doing total through 2018. And, you know, we absolutely look forward to that, in addition to the rehabs that we got going on for both the escalators and the elevators as well. Station lighting is very critical. We have a pilot project that we've designed for Judy Square, which we'll be implementing here towards the end of this month, and we'll extend that to three other stations by FY13. And what that is, it's to relook at how we light the stations. It's to relamp. It's not just to relamp, but it's to redefine where we put these, and not just to provide better lighting, but to be able to provide better maintenance activities. Also, so that the lenses and the covers on them aren't as susceptible to dirt. I mean, if you look at some of these things, they're just receptacles for trash, you know, along the escalator. So it's important that we look at that, you know, which you know, we have the benefit of hindsight. You know, the designers of the system, you know, didn't have all that, you know, the data that we have. So we can look at these things and we can improve them. And additionally, doing really good enhancements of 14 stations. And this includes not just relamping, but changing of fixtures, cleaning of fixtures, making sure that it's done and done well. And additionally, what we've done is we've created an environment in the operations group where it becomes, you know, everybody's responsibility to make sure that station lighting is improved. You know, we had issues where, you know, we had, unfortunately, we had lights that were relamped and they kept trash in the receptacles, you know, and they didn't clean the trash out. So, you know, the assistant general or the general superintendents for plant and power are working very closely now to make sure that those incidents don't happen. So, you know, there's a very human element to fixing this as well as, you know, not just technology. The elevator features for accessibility, obviously, you know, get for the visually impaired, you know, standardization of where the Braille is and markers for those. And the improved wayfinding. We've reorganized our signage department into the engineering for the structures group. We have really good oversight for that now. People are going out looking at the wayfinding signs, you know, recognizing where these issues are. And it's something like for the Rush Plus. What we noticed is that the Braille signs, the ones that we were putting out, they actually they could pick away at the Braille. So we've introduced new signs that are less susceptible to that. You know, we recognize that. We've seen that. We've done surveys for that. So those kinds of improvements are very important to us to do that. Along the HVAC, again, one of the large CIP projects is the, replacement of the HVAC in the stations where we do maintain the 6-degree temperature differentials. We have increased the preventive maintenance cycles. Again, this is working concurrently with plant and power personnel to make sure that they do those necessary preventive maintenance cycles. You know, like I said before with the escalators, it's not all about the capital improvement, but it's how well we maintain the systems that we have. And the remote monitoring temperature at 47 stations by mid-July, again, this gets into a technology environment where we now can progress that those digital signals that used to be analog. We can progress those digital signals in through the Ethernet to be able to do that. Hot vehicles last year were a big deal, and we have provided intense seasonal campaigns to make sure that we address these, that we're ahead of these, that we're not being reactive to these. You know, that what we've done is we have a campaign moving forward. We've had, targets. You know, you spoke about milestones that we have to hit and, in regards to, cleaning out the units, changing filters, doing all that kind of stuff, being ahead of it before it becomes an issue. So I'm pleased to report that we are, along those, plus our ability to identify and take care of these cars a lot more quicker and return them to service.
And finally, but it's actually not finally, it'll go through all throughout the program, are the ways that we'll measure our progress. The first is the Mystery Rider program. And it was developed with the learnings from the focus groups as well as working directly with the departments, as I mentioned before. And the riders, our mystery riders, will be out on every single bus route at least once a year and four times per quarter on the rail side. And these are the series of reports that are created on a quarterly basis on all of those topics. In addition to that, on a daily basis, there is called a hot alert. So if a mystery rider sees something, let's say that an overflowing trash can in one of the stations, and maybe that is an item that we identified with maintenance that has to be flagged right away, it goes right away to the department that day so that they can address it. Also, we work with our colleagues in that they can also see the information. They can go into the system. It's all put into a system. They can figure out where it is, what time it happened, and so on to get the details. And then we report out also on a quarterly basis to the executive team on the results. Next slide. Finally, we are about to kick off we're getting very close to starting a satisfaction survey this summer, and it will involve interviewing, as you can see, 800 customers. Separately, we have worked with Christian on different measures, so he has a different tool set, but he also will be measuring progress. The customers will be dialed on the phone, random dialed. They will have to get through a review process, and we will also use cell phone numbers because in this region, not everybody has a landline, as they say. And these are the series of areas that we will talk to people about, and we will chart our progress from that, and not only just chart our progress, but identify other areas that we need to work on. So that concludes my report and our report, our team report to you.
Thanks. Some comments or
myself.
Yes, well, first of all, thank you for this very comprehensive report, and I think it's a very good step in terms of honoring our commitment to our customers. I just had a follow-up question regarding kind of the update of this action plan. Is it our intent to reissue a new action plan every year? I note that some of the tasks here have been, for some things have been totally, almost totally completed, such as with paratransit, let's say. And so there may be other items that you will try to address next year or the year after. So I'm just trying to get a sense of
it. It is a dynamic process. In fact, while we might report back to you annually, maybe in the same way we did today, we'll continue to change it throughout the year. We just, it's dynamic, and we want to react to the latest things we're hearing from our customers as well as from, and we'll make the adjustments. So.
I also wanted to thank you for this very good report, but also for the efforts you're making and the emphasis on customer service going on concurrently with the other things we're working on. Similar question. You said you were following up with these two elements, the mystery rider, the satisfaction survey, the customer satisfaction survey. I just wanted to make sure that you're not just following up on the items that you are correcting, but you're actually following up on customers' sense that things are improving.
Yeah, it's not specifically did you see this or did you see that, although the mystery rider program is very, it's a prescribed checklist, so and that can evolve over time as we, but it's about cleanliness, it's about, is the signage in place, it's pretty important things about announcements and so on, but the satisfaction index is more global about general areas of satisfaction. Are we communicating with you? You know, how is the ride quality, things of that nature. And then as we watch it and you watch the progress, it helps you identify areas that you need to drill down on. So if you see something happening, it should be as if we need to get more information, you would say, we should do focus groups on this. We need to understand more about what is driving this. So that's kind of the way that you use that tool.
So if you have an area where people have expressed in the initial surveys, the initial focus groups, they've expressed a concern, we came up with six items that we believe will address that concern, all six have been checked off, but the concern is still there, then that comes up through the survey.
Yeah, then we really need to go back, and we need to, because you can only get so much, you know, you need to use lots of different tools. You can only get so much from a phone survey. You can only ask certain types of questions, so you really need to drill down and do more of a qualitative conversation, which happens in smaller groups, yes.
Or you might even need to come up with additional remedies, maybe some things we haven't thought of yet that need to be addressed to deal with an ongoing concern that's of sufficient magnitude.
Yes, yes.
Mr. Downs.
I've mentioned that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Right. Thanks. Just one last thing on the survey. So you're going to do 800 people a quarter. So that'll be a pretty good-sized sample over the course of a year of our riders. Are you, as you think about building those interviews and those people you touch base with, are you making sure that we're getting a statistically valid sample that's across the jurisdictions and among our various types of riders?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Great.
I also say, the focus groups are a little different. They're about trends. But even, you know, I want to assure you that even when we call in the focus groups, we try to make sure that we cover and that it's balanced. But you can do that even more when you're dialing up 800. You can make sure that we have the whole.
Right. And do we have provisions, Barbara, in that to deal with different languages? Because truly, yeah, we do. Good, because I think that's important as well.
How many languages are we dealing with? Not just Spanish? Okay, because in some areas, there are significant pockets of other languages.
Right. To Barbara's point about when you drill down with smaller groups, you can have a Korean-speaking facilitator for a focus group, for example, if you want to find out about a concern in a particular community.
Okay, good.
I said Andrea that I think, while not a KPI in the way we think of KPIs right now on the quarterly manager's report. Ultimately, when you say a customer service index will be created for multiple groups and tracked, I think this needs the discipline of a quarterly customer service index where you've put these concerns together and you measure pretty consistently over time what the customers are seeing and feeling within the system. This is our face to the customer. I mean, we have to be consistent about what we measure, and we have to do it, I believe, quarterly to be accountable for customer satisfaction. And I hope that you will work hard at developing out of the initial surveys and refining it over time of a kind of KPI as a key performance indicator that is as important as all of the other KPIs that we talk about now on operations and safety and security, et cetera. This is equal in importance to those other KPIs. And that discipline about having a defined set of performance measures and a way of tracking them over time will tell us how we're trending with our customers. And it also tells them they're important and we're listening, which sometimes in a big system people aren't sure about. The other comment I make is about lighting, and I kind of comment, and I know that you know this, but at times the lighting in the system resembles a hobby shop of different ideas that have been tried out over decades about different lighting configurations, different arrangement of lights, different types of lighting. We have one of everything, it seems, in the system. And if we're developing new lighting standards, it would be great to make a presentation at one of these committee meetings about the new lighting standards, what they are, how they'll be implemented. I think it is one of the most visible things for the customer. And if we have a good story to tell, we ought to tell it visibly, no pun intended, about lighting and what we're doing and where we're going and what it... Okay.
I just also wanted to say that they're part of our preparation for that. We've been reported on, like we've had some stations where the technology was too bright and we got, you know, comments and stuff that fed back. So it's something that we can probably give you probably a snapshot of what we're trying to do. But there is a lot of different technology and fixtures and placements and stuff that we have to go through this process of just testing just to see what it can do, because what we have found out is that some of these great theories of, say, for instance, like on some of the LED technology and some of their applications, once you actually install it, depending upon its environment, makes a big difference. And before we go off and go grand scale, we've been very conservative in our approach, and that's why the stations that's being noted as far as the improvement of lighting and everything else, there's also some stability, because I don't want to have something that's installed and then all of a sudden 3 months later it doesn't work or we're having to replace it out every 4 months. Because the one thing that I am very skeptical or very cautious about is a vendor can always give you a great test product. But what happens whenever they go into their production run, and how do they actually, and how does the commercial market support it? So we have to be mindful of those steps as well.
I wasn't just talking about current experiments. Sure. I'm talking about stuff that's happened over the last couple of decades where people have tried different things, and they're just kind of, they're strung all over the system.
Sure. We'll try to keep the presentation as brief as possible.
Mr. Downs, just on that last note, I would, I don't know if others have been experienced, our jurisdiction has been doing a lot of work with LED and people's reactions to different kinds of LEDs, because a lot of these lights actually people hate. They're too bright, their color's wrong or whatever, but you might find in an outreach to the jurisdictions that there's some lessons learned about what's acceptable and what's not to the sort of the ordinary people.
Last item, rail on time performance.
If you go over to Judiciary Square, there's two different installations over there that people have tried different ways of doing platform lighting and station lighting.
As we get assembled here, just wanted to kind of purpose behind this presentation, and was probably a little bit on the rush side of this, no pun intended for Rush Plus, but since our systems on the way that we sample our on-time performance and the way that we're moving these alignment stuff around, wanted to kind of provide a heads up because of the quarterly reporting, the potential impact on our KPIs. The other component of this was to be able to talk about it now, but we're going to be faced with the same issue, if not more, whenever we also start introducing the Silver Line, because we're going to start having to reconfigure alignments and rail cars and stuff. But we do know that the on-time performance system for rail is, you know, extremely important. And anytime we touch it or introduce something to it, or if it's, you know, perceived that we move things around, we want to make sure that we communicate that on the front end on what we're possibly facing. And with that, I'll let Andrea start on this one.
Thank you. Andrea Burnside, Chief Performance Officer. Hopefully my presentation will be pretty short. It's a little drier than the last one, but calculation is not exactly a real exciting topic. But really what I wanted to do today was really just to inform the board and the committee about the way we calculate rail on-time performance is going to be changing with the implementation of Rush Plus on Monday, as Dave said. And really the change is kind of to the math and the algorithm behind the calculation. What you'll see publicly in vital signs, in the body of the report and in the detail behind will be the same. We'll still show it to you system-wide, and we'll show it to you by line color. So frankly, the change will be transparent to you, but as Dave said, we want to let you know that the calculation is changing behind the scenes. So why is that? Rush Plus introduces a complexity that really can't be accommodated in our current algorithm and calculation. And the two reasons are the uneven headways, which is time between trains, as you know, and the line colors extending. So uneven means, if you looked at the blue line right now, the blue lines are all scheduled to arrive at the same intervals. But now with Rush Plus, the third train is going to be arriving at a different interval than the first two. So the spacing is greater. And then line colors extending means if you looked at the orange line, you might get on the orange line at Vienna, and one station might say that the destination is New Carrollton, and another train might say that the destination is Largo Town Center. So that's what I mean by line colors extending. So if we used our current method of calculating, the on-time performance would incorrectly decline. It wouldn't really reflect customer experience. And if I looked at the blue line example, what that means is with every third train arriving at a different interval, the maximum on-time performance under today's calculation would be 67%, when in fact it could be really 100% in reality. Next slide. So looking at our calculation today briefly, as I said, our formula is based on how well the trains adhere to the planned headways or the time between trains within certain tolerances. Right now the time between trains varies between 3 to 20 minutes, and that really depends on where in the system the train that we're in the system you're talking about in the time of day. And as I said, that they're scheduled to arrive in even intervals. We calculate on-time performance using data from core stations by line. We then roll that up to a line level and system-wide and report it to you. And as you know, our target for this current calendar year is 90%. I'm happy to say in April, I think we achieved 90.8%. And then finally, thinking about next Monday, starting on Monday, as I mentioned, the two conditions that are introduced that complicate things. What we are going to do to be able to address this is break the system into smaller segments. That's for the purposes of our calculation. As I said, we're still going to report it to you at a system-wide level and by line level. We selected the segment specifically based on unique patterns of service. So you could see an example of two segments circled there in the middle. In the light blue circle is the Roslyn to Stadium Armory. And that has kind of a unique pattern of service because the time between trains is pretty short. It's in the system core. And over to the right in the dark blue circle is another type of segment, Benning Road to Largo Town Center, near the end of the line with longer headways. So while we use the segments, again, as a basis for the map, we will roll it up as we report it to you. So that really concludes my presentation. We've come up with a solution to deal with the complexity introduced by Rush Plus, and we will start using that Monday. You will see it for the first time in the September vital signs, which is our next quarterly schedule report. Any questions?
Mr. Towns? Thank you, Andrea. It's always, I'm still sort of struggling on the math part of it, but let me ask you, because we really, the rush hour now has this totally, will have this very different pattern for many riders than it does right now. And so we'll look at that as a piece, right? We're going to report on Rush Plus. Are you rolling that in?
We're not reporting on Rush Plus specifically. It's just the overall rail on time performance.
Okay. Well, then I guess my request really is, could we in the first couple of months or the first couple of times that we report on this, could we kind of break it apart? And so could we look at Rush Plus, how it's meeting the schedule, and then at, you know, the non-Rush Plus time so that the board can sort of see what's going on? Is that possible?
Let me say we'll try, but I need to go talk to the technical
sure.
people to make sure that I'm not promising something we can't
yeah.
deliver.
No, I totally get that. And then the other question I have, and it's really just that you're doing this that prompts my question, but I was coming back late one weeknight from something, and I waited a really long time at a transfer. I waited a long time wherever I got on, and then I waited more than 15 minutes at my transfer station. And I just am wondering how we're doing after 10 o'clock at night, what kinds of headways we're actually achieving and how close it is to what we expected. And I know we have a window around which we say it's okay, but, you know, if you're doing a complicated, or you're doing a transfer and the train left early, or something, it just all of a sudden begins to seem like a long, long wait. So I don't know if there's a way we can take a look at that after 10 o'clock thing. And it's really the weeknights as opposed to the weekends. It seems weekends I'm not hearing as many complaints from people. But anyway, I'm just wondering if we can look
okay.
at that.
We can take a look at that.
And also just a kind of a closer, even though we're working off of this 100% off of technology and algorithms and everything else, we're still going to be deploying staff at certain locations so that we validate this physically to make sure that, you know, as the schedule that's being handed, you know, to the train operator and everything else, that we sample in these other respective areas. And with this new approach where we're, you know, going to be looking at some of these outlining areas, it's actually going to probably be a little bit more rigid than what we previously were able to sample because there was just certain locations along the general way. But now with us having to pull this out, we'll kind of get a snapshot of where we're at, you know, in the outlying areas as well as what's in the core. So it's going to be a very interesting time to see how things are sampled. And as far as the peak and the off-peak, we do have some sampling, but we'll have to kind of get it together so we can see if that's the information you're looking at, because there's four quadrants which we're interested that we kind of measure on a regular basis that we're working off of right now. And it's also on how we ramp up and then ramp back down and then ramp up, because it's the entryway of how we're deploying the assets to really meet the time of when peak service aligns.
That's actually a good point they've made. So I think our new way of measuring is going to be more robust. We're actually doubling the number of stations that we're looking at to figure out whether they're on time. So.
And I understand that you'll try and reconfigure previous data into the new framework?
Yes.
For comparability purposes?
Yeah, for trending, we will recalculate data back through the beginning of this calendar year and 2011.
The goal of
90% will stay as the goal?
Yes. Or better.
Or better.
Actually, our target is or better than 90%.
There are how many segments that you'll be?
It's 14.
Does this ultimately give us a tool about measuring other performance in the system?
I'm not sure I know what you're asking.
The rail service criteria standards that you're working on for the presentation, is it next month?
Yes. This is not real. It will not really be used that way.
I know, but it's additional data by segment instead of by line.
Yes. Yeah, we will have it at the segment level.
Right. So, anyway, any other questions, comments? Have we exhausted everybody?
I
will adjourn the meeting. Thank you all. Thanks for your patience, everybody.